Today is Wednesday, November 30th, 2016. This is Jeff Machota here at Tom Painter's house for the Nature's Table Oral History Project. We're going to start talking about Nature's Table. So Tom, tell us about what brought you to Nature's Table for the first time. What brought you to the U of I, to Urbana-Champaign? Take it away.
Well, the first occasion was that I won the Illinois State Science Academy something for a project on the radioactivity and effects on plants that could be generated by radon. And so I came with my parents for that. I don't think I went to the table that night. I did have a friend who was going to school, and a couple years later, probably in about 1986, came down and heard Guido for the first time. And I thought he was an utter trip.
So you were with your friend and heard Guido?
Yeah, with my friend Deborah Flant and also Mark Banach, a guitarist who played at the table once, maybe. But I heard him, and he was just so sincere, and I just remember that he turned around, and Big Daddy was playing bass. I don't know if you remember him.
I don't.
But Guido just said, "Big Daddy, two choruses." And I just never heard a band leader, like, just utter things on the stage. I was used to conductors, you know, because I started playing organ at a Catholic church, and in choir. I didn't sing, thankfully. Played flute and piano. But it all kind of led to the U of I, because I was out at Berkeley, and it was pretty expensive, and they weren't going to renew my scholarship. So U of I had in-state tuition, which was then probably $700 or $800. So I did that. I opted for that, and they had great composition faculty. Some of them actually played at the table.
So you first came to go to school here in the fall of 86?
87.
Fall of 87.
1 year at Berkeley, and then
okay.
U of I for my bachelor's for 3 years, and then my master's for 2 years, and then 1 year of, I guess, doctorate things that were not acknowledged by the University of Chicago, which I went after this.
So you came here in 86, and you were just checking things out or visiting a friend. That's when you saw Guido. And then had that person been going to the table already?
Not so much.
So you just kind of saw it and said, "Hey, I need to
go." I said, "Man, what jazz clubs do you have?" You know, and it was like 2 blocks away from the music school. And I was just like, "Hey, we got to go there," you know. And I will say this about Nature's Table. We bought 2 t-shirts. And I don't know how much they were, but we gave them like $20, and you guys didn't have change, and you said the register's closed. So you gave us like 3 Leinenkugels or something. I had never had a beer. So I just, you know, what I enjoyed it, and I thought it was funny, but I have the green Nature's Table shirt, which is very threadbare now. But
do you have any idea who was working that night?
Probably either you and or Brian Ruth.
Okay.
Or Bob.
Okay.
Whitbeck.
Okay.
Whatever his last name is.
Yeah. And you said, who else was in Guido's band?
Oh, golly gee. I think Joe Groans was playing piano.
Okay.
Big Daddy on bass. And I can't remember who was on drums. Possibly John Dahlstadt. But John was playing a lot more drums in those days.
Okay.
And
so then you went away, you saw that gig and it made an impression, and then
I said, "Hell yeah, I'm going to come down there and study with Sal Marano and, you know, all the great composers on the faculty," and Paul Zahn. Had a wild gig with him, you know, excellent clarinet player. Good teacher.
So you did a whole year at Berkeley and then came back here.
Yeah, and at Berkeley I was just sort of ambiguously enrolled. I wasn't a composition major. My study was flute, but I just knew when I went to the table that I needed to come back.
And then what was your major here then when you started off?
It was composition.
Composition.
Yeah. And we had great faculty at the time, you know, not only Sal, Paul Zahn, you know, Severo Tepe, Herbert Brunn, who actually played with Guido. That was a funny gig.
I was there.
You were there. They were playing like Bertolt Brecht, like Three Penny Opera stuff. And he was a cabaret pianist. And I do remember a lot of piano players, and I mentioned Joe Grons. He was a good guy, and he threw me some gigs, actually. Peter Rumbold, who was more of a traditional jazz player.
I remember Peter.
We hung out a lot together, and he could play stride like no one else, and ragtime. Lawrence Hobgood, of course. Andrew Agnew, and then Mike Coker. And he also played organ. He was one of the organists, I remember, along with Russell Cheatham. And then Michael Stryker, who we both played in Garb Band together. We had two piano players, but I could play flute, so I had something else to do when he was playing. Kelly Brand, Joan Hickey, and Bob Dogan from Chicago, from the Cooper Dogan Group, which was with Art Davis. And I will mention Art Davis again because he became one of my teachers in improvisation and also in African drumming, which was one of the more memorable things I did at the table. But the first time I heard him was with Brad Wheeler and I think Dan DiLorenzo, but it was something weird about the summer air. It was very humid that there was actually smoke coming out of his horn. I mean, condensation, and I was like, man, this is a sign, you know? And I think that was one of the more memorable performances. Other memorable performances, Hal Russell Energy Ensemble.
I remember that one.
With Brian Sandrum and
Mars Williams,
and just great.
Kent something.
Kent Kessler, and just, they had two bass players, and one of the bass players played trumpet, sort of. And Hal, while he was a trumpet major at the U of I, he came out and he did this Miles Davis impersonation, and it was a parody. But they did a lot of unique arrangements, and I was like, shit. And I think they came to the table at least two times when I was a student.
I think you're right.
Let's see. What else is memorable? Okay, playing with George Freeman. He played with a half dollar. He put his amp right under the piano bench and had it on like 13, not 11. And he had the reverb cranked and he broke a string because of this technique he had and with the half dollar. And,
so you were playing on that gig with
him? I was playing on the Friday night gig, and then I showed up Saturday. I thought it would be the same thing. Guido's there, George is there, and Lawrence is there. You know, but I do remember for that first gig, I made $50, and I was like, hey, man, this is great. You know, but let's see what I have other than that. Musicians, Guido, of course, Donald Garrett, Raphael. He was a wild one. He would come into your gig and you'd hear a flute and it's like you weren't playing the flute. No, Raphael was playing the flute in the crowd. Unbeknownst to me and with no... Anyway, Chuck Tripp on guitar was just fascinating. The whole Sorghum thing, Russell and Jelly. And then all the tenor players, Kevin Angle, Kevin Kaiser, Tim McNamara, Scott Frillman, you know, they all helped me out in various ways. Drummers, Danny Decker, Justin Kramer, Jelly, George, I don't remember his last name, he was blind.
George Boyle.
Yeah. And John Dahlstedt.
So when you came in 87, Did you start getting gigs right away, or were you a side person, or what, do you remember your first gig
there? I was a side person with Guido, and then...
So tell me how you met Guido.
Just sitting in at the jam sessions, I think, but I also had, with much reticence on Mr. Masser's part, got gigs with a group called Nebula, the music of Diffused Gassers, with Ben Grosser and Alex Lazarevich and Danny, all of whom worked at the table, I think, in some form.
Was that wasn't your first gig, though. That was later, right?
No, I had like an organ gig. It was like my first organ gig. I think I borrowed an amp from Bob, maybe, and left it at the table.
But you played with Mike Caldwell, right?
That was with Mike Gould, Kevin Angle, Mike Caldwell.
Wait, what did Mike Gould play?
Drums and Doug Spaniel on bass.
Okay.
Electric PV. Then Mike Caldwell had this Gentle Giant big band, which I actually wrote an arrangement to, a Stevie Wonder tune, for once in my life, and we had one gig at the table.
So the band Or, that was that all, you were all in like the Garv band or in one of the...
I was in Berkner band at that point probably, but the Garv band did play at the table when I was in the Garv band once. They used to play there a lot, I guess. I don't know. But then Bontuku, we were pretty much Legion, and a lot of rowdy crowds with that. But it was fun, and I learned some stuff from Oscar Sully. Really good drummer, and we used to have these flute duels, you know, and like a slight challenge, but, you know.
Who was in Bontuku at that point?
Oh, tons of people, man. Jeff Helgeson, Glenn Schutz, Kevin Engel, Peter Rubel, Chuck Harhughes, guitar player. We could never seem to find a normal drummer. Oscar tried to have his wife play drums, and that didn't work out. And I think Justin Kramer played with Bontuku for a while.
So you were just playing percussion and flute in this?
I was playing keyboard, some sort of DX9 or something, okay. and flute. So we made one I made one recording with Oscar, and it turned out okay. We produced it at Chuck Harhughes' house.
Is that the cassette? Like the shrimp and the something?
Yeah, the fish and the shrimp.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see, who else? Duck Soup with Ted Petith, Beth Tryon, and Dave Easley.
You were in that band too?
Dave Easley was wild, man. He had a MIDI set up on his
pedal steel.
Pedal steel, but he could make it sound like a Hammond organ, and I was just like, you know. But I do remember rehearsing some with Ted and Beth at their house.
Were you playing piano or keyboard in that?
Mostly piano, a little bit of flute, and then whatever Guido called his group, I think it was maybe the Happy Blues Band. I don't know if I was actually a member of that, but it was basically just a jam. But he'd call me, and he would drive me around to Kinko's and have me copy music for him. And, you know, he'd always know where the party was, and we'd go and hang out. And he had that old Chevy with the padlock on the back trunk. But I learned more from Guido than probably a lot of the people at U of I, my classes, you know, I mean, obviously the composers were good.
And when you were playing with Guido, who else was in the band at that point, usually?
Hard to remember. I mean, Kevin Engel would always come and sit in at least, Michael Blumy on trumpet and piano, at a loss for words. David Spade? No, he's a comedian. David Swain?
Oh, he played piano. So
he played piano like for the dance department. But he would come over and play with Ronnie Gottler they had a trio with Ronnie Dowler and Doug Spaniel on bass. And Ronnie was wearing lipstick at the time. I didn't know what was up with that, but the dancers loved him.
I remember he was playing, because he was a percussionist, but he played kit, and for a while...
Yes, he was playing kit and not really playing kit.
That was, because I remember that was a Guido band. I think it was you and, as I recall, you and Justin and Elliot Torres.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin Engel, and you were Guido's band for quite a while, and then it turned over at some point, and then it was...
Yeah.
Then it was Swain... Spaniel and Gottler and Guido. Like, that was, I think, after
perhaps,
or maybe before.
Yeah. And then there was the Tom Painter Trio, which was me and Elliot Torres and Kent Johnson on drums. And we played there several times, including the last day, but and I just played with both those guys, well, Kent about 4 years ago, but Elliot like last year. Still sounds great. Sorry for all the bugs, dude. That's about all the notes I have.
I have more questions for you. So, give me what's your first memory or early memories of dealing with Terry?
Well, he was very reticent to, I basically used Nature's Table as my office one summer because I didn't really have a phone. So I'd just tell him the table's number, and I would hang out at the worst time, lunchtime, in the side room there where the tape deck was, and he was not a happy camper, you know? And it took a while, a few requests for me to actually get my own gigs there, but... I don't know what to say about the guy. I mean, he's a great guy. He gave me a job later at Sweet Betsy's. He was a decent cook, you know. He knew his stuff. I mean, that was the other thing I was going to talk about, is the food at Nature's Table, which really opened up. I mean, I kind of learned to eat at Nature's Table and through interacting with Art Davis and other people that were into healthy living. I mean, drinking a lot of beer, but I'm a slow learner, but the food I noted was cucumber and cheese, and it had all like three different cheeses on it or something, and cucumbers, carob cookies, that was the alternative to chocolate chip cookies, and then vegetarian pizza with broccoli on it. I never had a pizza until I was 21, so that... And then...
You never had any kind of pizza until you were 21?
That's correct. And the first one was a Domino's. Then I remember my 21st birthday, this girl, Ingrid Tikhoff, she played violin.
I remember her.
She was a one-time girlfriend of Kevin Engel's. But she said, "Oh, I want to buy you a drink." And I said, "How about a Coors root beer?" Or I had a Coors Cola or something. But I remember that was like the first place I ever had Coors Natural Soda. It has nothing to do with Coors.
That was C-O-R-R, not C-O-O-R.
Yes, yes. Oh, okay. Well, I spelled it wrong. And then the bread.
So for your 21st birthday, you had a root beer?
Yeah, I think. Or a cola.
Cola.
Something.
Yes.
I think a root beer. Okay. I liked the root beer. It was very good. Pungent. And then the bread, which Jeff Michael would make at, like, whatever, 4:30 in the morning or something. I always wondered why he was drinking a Guinness at, like, 1 p.m. And then I realized, whoa, he's been up for 7 hours. But, you know, it's a lot of it was the people and, you know, there's other people that, you know, Vicky Alexander, I mean, she was a random occurrence. Sal Martirano, who came in, and I was jamming with Guido, and he's, like, pretty much into his cups. And he was, like, hitting the wood on the piano. Like, I was playing low A, lowest note. He's like, "Go lower!"
Sal was saying that?
Yeah, "Go lower!" He was, like, screaming it in my ear. And then he bumped my ass off the piano bench and began to play. I don't know. I can't really say anything bad about Sal. He was utterly weird, and that's, you know, I think the table environment embraced, you know, I don't want to use the term diversity, but, you know, it's like you felt at home there. And there's certain things I probably shouldn't mention, but, you know, I was hip to a lot of shit there by Scott Frillman, Kevin Kaiser, you know. And I'm talking about things other than music, sort of. I'll just leave it at that.
Those who know, know.
Yes.
So how about...
I smoked my first joint at the table in front of the counter with Scott Frillman. All right.
So how about some memorable Guido stories? Or on gigs or whatever.
Well, he kicked my ass off the piano bench once, too, and I remember the tune, which I don't remember now because he kicked my ass off the piano bench, but it was called Blue Gardenia, and it was like Guido scrawl, you know, it was like in pencil, and it was like all like just chord changes. I didn't know the tune, and he just calls it out of the blue, "Let's play Blue Gardenia," and I'm just like, all right. He's like, "Get your ass out of the way." You know, he was, he could be slightly harsh sometimes, you know, but I don't agree that, you know, some people said he was like a bullshit artist. I don't agree that. He never hit me up for cash. I mean, I paid for some of his copies. He gave me copies of his stuff, you know. He never hit me up for cash. He never said go buy a pack of Cools, which he did say to Kevin, but I wasn't smoking at the time, so. But, yeah, like, we went to parties, and, he had a certain, je ne sais quoi, I mean, a certain swagger, you know, he could fit in with anyone, I don't know, I'm kind of. Unless you have any other questions.
Well, I've got more questions. We're not done yet.
Okay. Let me look at some of these posters.
Sure. So, when you played your gigs, were you playing any of your original tunes at that point?
A little bit. We did do some, happy hours, and I got pretty out on that sometimes with, like, Mike Gould, that we would just play, like, drums and ARP 2600, you know, synth, and I didn't even have a keyboard for the synth. I was just like playing buttons, so I was Jay Eichner before it was Jay Eichner. Yeah, this all rings a bell.
So at the U of I, you were in the Berkner band at first, which was the number two band.
Yeah, and then. Then I was in Garv Band, I think because John didn't come to the rehearsals. That's how Dan Honnold got in the Garv Band.
Because John Garvey didn't come to rehearsals?
No, he didn't come to the audition.
Audition.
So it was just like anyone. Oh, there's Tom Painter Quintet. I don't know what year, but...
That's like 88, I think.
Guido's jam session, and then, yeah, so I was, I mean, certain weeks I was playing there, like, Sorghum with Kurt Morrison. Wow. I don't remember that.
It's after Chuck left, and I think after Mark Juba was gone.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, there were certain weeks that I was playing, like, two or three nights sometimes at the table, in some form.
That's the closing weekend.
Oh, okay.
So Terry booked everything, except he didn't want to do the closing weekend, and I booked the closing weekend.
Oh.
And, it was the first time I booked any music. And you were playing, So with the Tom Payne, you actually kicked off the Sunday.
Yes, and then I stuck around and played with Kevin Angle.
So it says quartet. Was it a quartet or was it a trio?
It was a trio.
Was that Elliot and Justin or was that Elliot and Kent?
It was Elliot and Kent. And that was like one of the first recordings that Paul Winky did for the Jazz Live series. That was the first recording, I think, as far as what he told me. Then I stuck around, played with Kevin, and then I was exhausted. I was going to come back and play with the jam at the end with Jeff, and I think I slept for like 9 hours or something.
I'm not sure. I don't think Kaiser played. I think it ended up being Britta.
Yeah, I don't even remember that. I thought I played like 2 gigs in a row, and that's what.
Yeah, I think these were early versions, because here it says Tom Painter Quartet, and then it says More Jazz. So I think the recordings are Britta played. I think you may have stuck around and played with Britta. I think your band may, like Britta and somebody else, may have joined the band. So do you remember, what are your memories of the last day? Of playing? Because you guys kicked it off. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday.
Yeah. I was sorry to see it go, but I think it was like probably one of my best performances ever, for whatever reason.
I have a memory I'll share of that gig.
So, Kristen John's little, well, he's not little anymore. He's taller than I am, but he had a video camera and he was like doing interviews with people. And so Kristen's got that somewhere. She hasn't shown it to me, but then there was the auction the next day. I got the chalkboard of the menu. And my mom threw it out.
You bought that?
I bought that for, $5 or something. And it was in my basement in Arlington Heights. And then my mom decided, oh, we're just going to throw all Tom's shit out. You know? Not that it actually cleaned up the basement any. But I was pissed off about that. And I don't think I got anything else from the auction. The last day, I just conked out. I mean, the set with Kevin was Kevin Angle and Friend. That was good. And then I just sort of conked out. And I remember there was always good food. So there was, that was cool.
Well, here's my, so I remember, I'm not sure if I was working. We alternated who was working that day. So not everybody would be stuck behind the bar. And you started playing. It was a beautiful day. Terry had the camper out in the side, and he was starting to barbecue and cooking.
Oh.
And it was just starting. People were just starting to show up. And I remember you guys were playing, and it was just a great set of music. And people were drifting in and out of the table. It was a nice day, and getting food and coming back. And it was just kind of kicking off what was ended up being a really long and great day. That was my memory of that. And then you... What I remember is that I asked Kevin to put together a Guido tribute, and he didn't want to do that because Guido had pissed him off recently. Because Guido was in the... I'm not sure if... Because Guido had a stroke at that point, or his second stroke. He was maybe in the nursing home. And but it ended up... I'm pretty sure Kevin Angle and Friends was... It was you. It was Elliot, Justin, and... was there somebody else in that? Maybe somebody on... Trumpet? Hmm. No, probably not. Maybe another sax player.
I don't know. But I remember Guido coming in. He actually came in and sat down.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very respectful. We did actually play one of his tunes.
Yes.
Be Truthful, or one of his tunes.
I do remember that. Because I remember Fred. Do you remember Fred? Maybe Shirley's cousin. People just call him Brain Dead Fred. he had picked up Guido and brought him over, and Guido was there.
Fred Krueger?
I don't remember his last name.
He was a trumpet player?
No, he's big, tall dude. Huh. They picked him up and they brought him in. And Kevin kicked off. And he was there for that. He played, maybe it was Be Truthful. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah. It's one of his tunes. I know the Standard Time Quintet. I played that the other night on the show. they played that tune, and
they named their album at that tune.
Yeah. So, what else about?
Well, who do you remember working wise? Because you never actually worked behind the counter, did you?
I did not work behind the counter. I remember you, Bob Wetback, Brian Ruth, Rose, Jeff Michael, of course. He was hard to miss. I also remember certain customers.
Okay.
Such as Tim Bowlby, who had the everlasting cup of coffee. The guy would be there from 9 to 1, you know, and 45 cents. Okay. And just a lot of weird people. I mean, I don't even want to mention some of them, but the other thing that I was really wanted to mention is that I learned a lot about African music from both Oscar Sully and Steve Balderson and Scott Mordecai and Art Davis, and Dan DiLorenzo used to come down. And was it
the Agito Club? Was that what it was called?
It was the makings of the Agito Club. It was before that, but we did gigs with Gideon and Abu Bakari Luna, the talking drum guy, and then
Gideon was, were they both Ghanaian, or was Gideon was Ghanaian?
Yeah, they were both Ghanaian, and I don't know.
We're talking about African stuff. So what was it like playing with Oscar's band? Did you guys have a lot of rehearsals and charts for that, or what?
We had a lot of rehearsals and we had a lot of charts, but you could never take the charts home because he thought you were going to steal his ideas. And everything was based on some numerical sequence. It was African funk music. You know, I mean, it was, but I did learn a lot. I mean, just reading those charts down, and you had to nail it, you know, you had to be tight. And I think he appreciated me. I mean, he was not too good with the finances. I'll just say that. You don't go to Bloomington and have to spend a night in a girl's dormitory and make $6. That's what I didn't like. He paid the other musicians more, such as Helgeson. I got $6, he got 30, you know. I don't think that's fair. So, and he also, you know, he had some affairs with Guido, and there was some violence. I don't really want to talk about that. I mean, Guido he tended to get into fights, and it was usually over money. But, let's see, I don't know who else I really met at the table that was...
So you said you played a gig with George Freeman. Do you remember more about that besides his...
I was all stoked for it because I thought, oh, wow, I'm playing with Von Freeman's brother, you know? And then I listened to his album, and it was kind of like soul jazz. Kind of, sort of like Sorghum, but not, a little more jazzy, but I was like, it was modal, you know? And I was like, oh, I can hang with this. And then we just played whatever Guido called. And I just remember him being... way too loud and really just kind of inappropriate, you know. I was so stoked for this gig, and then it was in the end it was disappointing, and then especially disappointing when I went back the next day and I was replaced unbeknownst to me. And of course Lawrence is a better player than I, but you know, Guido didn't tell me that, you know. And George didn't care.
Were you ever on any of the gigs when he brought Vaughn down at all or not?
I did not hear Vaughn. I think I heard him once at a different, not at the table, but I know Vaughn came down. John Campbell came down, and there were a lot of musicians from Chicago that would come down, and you know, Kelly Sill, Kelly Brand, John Hickey, Dan DiLorenzo.
This is a little post table, but to me it's still tied to the table. So when Guido died, you played his wake. Do you remember that?
Sure.
Do you have any stories from that? Or just describe the whole setup?
The setup was a organ that had dust on it, and it was in some funeral parlor on the...
It was Blewett Parker Funeral
Hall. Yes, and I remember where I was supposed to play some tunes with... I don't know who was there. Kaiser was there. Was Kevin Engel there?
It's Kevin Engel, Kaiser, you, Justin, and Elliot. But
yeah.
The Kaiser didn't play.
So that was a Hammond, but it was not a B3. It was like a church organ. So, and it was kind of, like I said, it was like, probably had moths inside of it. But I remember that Kevin was so ill-disposed.
Kaiser.
Yes, Kevin Kaiser, that he basically couldn't play. And I do remember, though, that Popeye Kurtzinger sang Amazing Grace at the grave, and I lost it.
Yeah. I remember when you guys were playing, Kevin was just blowing so hard, Engel, like playing Guido tunes, and Guido was laid out in the next room. And there was a bunch of people didn't know there, but I was there with Terry and a few other people, and you were playing that organ, and it just had, it was great, but it had this, it was just a funky sounding little church organ. It had never played anything before, and it was, you were playing Guido tunes on it.
Yeah.
I remember there with Terry and somebody else, and we wanted to applaud after every tune, but it was awake,
yeah.
And that wasn't appropriate, but that was, I just remember the band really locked in, because you guys were really playing for Guido. And it just had this edge to it. And I remember going to the graveside, and then, yeah, Popeye sang Amazing Grace, and then Mary Clark sang Solitude. And anybody who didn't cry after both of those was not there.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was, there were tributes to Guido later, but I thought that was one of the best tributes that day. Just, that organ was really funky.
Yeah, well, yeah, and we tried to get Kevin Engel to come back for the Guido tribute that we did at the Canopy Club, but he couldn't. So we got Jonathan Beckett, who was nowhere near Nature's Table, but he put some time into understanding Guido's music.
He sounded great.
He did. He sounded great, and we didn't even have a rehearsal.
Really?
Yeah, we just winged it.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed that. My biggest regret about, that was one of the Nature's Table reunions, is that we scheduled it too tight. We had too many bands and we didn't let it breathe enough, because you guys were starting to really, it was happening. And then it was like, we got to turn it over for the next band.
Oh, yeah.
That was my regret for that, booking that one. Overscheduled.
I don't know. I mean, I used Helgeson's piano. I thought it sounded okay. Danny came in, Glenn Schutz, you know. Yeah, we didn't have a rehearsal. We just, I mean, most of those cats knew the tunes already, sort of. Danny certainly did. I got, like, new charts from Shirley, you know, like, well-written, you know, computer-notated. But I did screw up Shirley's Delight. She said, I heard that. I forgot four bars. And I jumped ahead and she's like, I heard that.
When you played Guido's tunes at the table, now he didn't play a lot of his tunes each set. Did he would just sprinkle in a few, or did he play?
I don't know. Seemed to play a lot of just bebop, standards, bird tunes, some of his tunes. But his tunes were kind of like bebop, bird tunes, but they were just Guido changes, and
Did you guys rehearse those, or did he just throw the charts out?
Yeah, we definitely rehearsed with Guido. I remember going over to Shirley's and rehearsing at the music building, and just basically the jam sessions were rehearsals of some sort. And then the whole Variety in Motion thing, I am not included on that, but there's a whole other set with me, Tim McNamara, and Russell Cheatham, and Matt North on drums. And all those tunes were not included on Variety in Motion, but it was the same.
So those were recorded at Pogo Studios.
Yeah, those are still in the can, and those are at now the Sousa Museum.
I may have copies of those. Shirley gave me some digital files, but she the notation is not clear who's on everything. So that's what she was trying to guess on some of the stuff.
Ryan Schultz, I think, on bass trumpet.
Huh.
And it was a weird amalgam of people, but for whatever reason, Guido just went with the other stuff.
Well, he was planning on releasing more.
Yeah.
He was planning on releasing.
Oh, he was planning on it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was Variety in Motion Volume 1 in his mind.
Oh, okay.
He was going to release like 2 or 3, but then he had a stroke.
Okay.
He never released another one. I think he was planning on using more of that stuff. I think he got those sessions, did them, and was hoping to like bank it and then release. Because you can only put so much on one cassette.
Sure.
Back then.
Sure. I just remember. We were sitting around the table, and Ryan Schultz was there. He played bass trumpet. And I think that might have been the night that Scott gave me a gift. And we were just listening to this, and Ryan's like, "Man, I wish I could play those licks you're playing." And I'm like, I didn't even know what that meant, but I was like, it's not that good. We were playing like some blues and F, and I was trying to be as Eric Dolphy as I could. And, but that was the only time I ever played with Russell Cheatham, was at Pogo. And it's sad that I don't have a recording of that.
So you were on flute for that session then?
Only flute, yeah.
Only flute.
And,
so do you have any recordings of any of the table stuff outside of the last day?
I have some with Kevin Kaiser and Britta Langston, and, actually Guido sits in on one of those tracks, but I don't know if it was after his first stroke, but he was definitely slowing down. But I'd have to dredge those up. I've got a lot of stuff that I bootlegged of, like, Coker and Kelly Sill, and Kelly Sill hated that. He said, "Well, if you make a recording of us, why would anyone come to hear us?" And, you know, so I was like, whoa, man, I should have asked permission, right? You know, but I had my little Denon boombox, and I was like, and
who was on that gig, do you think?
Well it was Kelly and Kelly Sill and Kelly Brand, and probably Phil Gerteau, and maybe
Art with that band.
Probably Art Davis, yeah. And they had that band for quite some time.
Maybe Bill Overton with them?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay.
I mean, I met him later. I don't remember him from the table.
Yeah, I don't either. I didn't meet him till later.
I don't know. I do remember the front of the table was very ornately decorated. And I just thought it was, I mean, it was kind of hippie, but it was like artistic. And who did that?
Chris Birdie did the painting, the mural. I mean, it's before my time, but
yeah,
that's who it was.
And that was the only other thing I was going to say, is that the you had some art showings there, and for a poor undergraduate, that meant free food and free wine, and so I was all over that.
Apples, bread, and brie cheese.
Cheese, yes. Cheese.
That was the first time I had brie cheese, was there.
But, it really gave an opportunity for not only musicians, but artists. And, you know, there was a lot of, I wouldn't say political activism, but I would say it. Because even in some of Jeff Michael's shows, they got pretty topical. And some of it was sarcastic, but so...
The Bob and Jeff shows?
The Bob and Jeff shows, yes. The only thing... Oh, then there was always Folk Night and Ed DiLello? Yeah, and somehow Guido wandered in to one of these things and wanted to sing. And my friend at the time, Lian Chen, would go there for these folk nights because she was in, I don't know what she was into, but she's like, there was a older black man who was singing. So Guido wandered in and started singing Wave. Joe Beam tune. So catch the wave. And she's like, he was so good. And I was like, you went to folk night with Ed DiLello? But she's like, hey, man, you know, I'm like, I play with Guido, like, every week. So then she started coming to the gigs,
Well, Papa used to play at those folk nights.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really learned a lot, but I think I also hipped a lot of people to, like, come out there, you know, hopefully, you know.
Did you feel that there was, so you were in the big bands, the Berkner band, the Garve band. Did a lot of those people, was there a lot of cross-pollination with people coming out, or were there?
There was a fair amount. I mean, Mike Caldwell and Kevin Engel were always a fixture in the Uvi bands. Art Davis, too, later. Tom Wirtle, later. I played in his band, which was a faculty, staff, student, something, amalgam. That was after the table. But, I don't know, Tamor Sullivan, Alex Lazarevich, Ben Grosser, they all, you know, played in one of the U of I bands. So, yeah, I would say there was a fair amount of cross-pollination, if you want to call it that. And pretty much everyone who played in all those bands I mentioned earlier played in some U of I ensemble.
This is a little deviation, but again, it's the same world. So you actually went with John Garvey's band to the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Do you want to tell any stories about that? Like, explain how that came about?
That could be just a whole other chapter, but I don't know. We went with...
So what year was this?
Art Davis, 1991. It was right when Perestroika was going on, so everything was completely dysfunctional.
So it was right after the table, actually, or was it that spring?
It was the summer of 91. It was right after the table.
Yeah, the table. Okay.
Yeah, so... And I remember I almost missed the bus to O'Hare or Midway, wherever we flew out of, and that was a hellish trip. It was like 18, 19 hours on a plane. And then our gigs in Yugoslavia didn't pan out, but I got to hang out with Alex Lazarevich's uncles, I think, or something. There's so many experiences. I mean, I got lost one time in Moscow just walking around. Just got disoriented. I had to ask someone, like, where's Red Square? And I was mistaken for a Spanish person that thought I wanted to buy rubles and habla español on Red Square in the like 10:30 at night or something. And I don't know. I met two ladies of the night. Did not do anything. I think I may have a picture of them, but they were kind of with these black market people that we were hanging out in this strange hotel, and they were like, they were into Deep Purple.
So they were into Deep Purple.
Yeah, and Flanagan, the trombone player, was it not Tom Flanagan, Sean Flanagan.
Yeah. His brother.
He's like, man, these guys are bad news. We got to get out of here. And our hotel was only, you know, several blocks away, so we just sort of... We were actually ushered out by the hotel staff because we had, like, more than worn out our welcome. And they were all drinking, like, weird stuff that smelled like turpentine. And, I don't know, I met a good guitarist there. He played sitar, his wife played flute, they invited me to his house. Really weird food, really weird, I don't even know, again, turpentine liquor, and I didn't even want, I didn't barely touch anything, but we kind of kept in touch, and I sent him some shirts and stuff, but... It was, like, the whole system was breaking down there. Like, you'd walk into a, what would be maybe a convenience store or something that's supposed to have, like, food. And, like, they had no bread. So I remember subsisting on a quart of cream milk or something, ice cream of some sort from Ireland. I saw this truck come around. It was like Irish. And what was this? And the food was just horrible, you know? But the people were great. And the other Russian band that we were sort of touring with, the Oleg Lundstrom Orchestra, was really top-notch. And we played some of their charts. And we played some charts with them. And, but they were impeccable technicians on their instruments. They didn't really like us. Like, I remember the piano player didn't really like me. He didn't have to like me. He was a professional jazz pianist, you know? I was a little fucking whatever-year-old, I can't do the math, 23. But so that was cool, and we played in Leningrad, and that was pretty well attended, but I remember when we played it in Kiev at the Hall of Youth. You know, it was this big commie place that looked like total Cold War. We came out to it, and it was like dark and like all gray and shit. It was like 7 in the morning. So we played there later, and we all, you know, came up and bowed, and someone flew, like, half a dozen roses at me.
Wow.
Never had that in America. I mean, they were very appreciative, and they were, like, bringing up the Garv albums from, like, the 60s and saying, will you sign this? Wow. And we were all, like, we're not on this album. And they're like, we don't care. So they were very appreciative, I would say. I mean, and we only spent like a month. It was a little bit of Yugoslavia. We never played in Yugoslavia, but it was both beautiful countries. And
you say a month?
Something approaching, wow, 30 days, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think we all got sick at least once.
So Kaiser was on that?
Kaiser was on that, and he insisted on listening to something on the bus. Oh, that's the bus story. You must hear about the bus story. Okay, Kaiser had to listen to the tenor player that played with Count Basie. God. One of his big people that he was into. Oh. Lockjaw Davis.
Got it. Oh, that makes sense.
And he had to listen to this, and so they had some crappy cassette player on the bus, and so he just fucking cranked Lockjaw for the whole trip from Moscow to Leningrad. And he's like, yeah! And he was... And then... The bus driver had a liter of Stolichnaya right in front of him, and he was just, you know, casually drinking it, you know, not you know, we were on tour with like Chuck Israels and John Garvey and, like, important people, you know, like, more than 20 people. And he's just getting jacked and winds up running the bus off the road in the boondocks somewhere between Moscow and Leningrad. And so we went into the ditch. I think I have a picture of this somewhere, too. So the bus was immobile. So we just sat there, like, okay. This is before cell phones, really. I mean,
oh, yeah.
But, so we saw some Russian army trucks, and I don't know if they had heard word or they just happened to come upon us, but they had a winch. Yeah. Well, maybe they had a winch too, but no, they had a winch, and they pulled us out, and I don't know what happened with that driver, but it was an in-tourist bus, and it was supposed to be all legit, you know, and I don't know. I do remember that most of the pianos in Russia were good, and that's the other thing I would mention about the table, was that it had the Mason and Hamlin upright, which I'd never played one of those, and now David Chang has it, collecting dust and other assorted goods. I told Shelley to get it back. It was at Sweet Betsy's.
So you liked playing that piano?
I did. It was good. It was a good jazz piano. It was very perky. It cut through. And of course, we always had a decent sound system at the table. It only got better when your dad helped us out with the Toa system, and then we could record direct to cassette. So those are some of the cassettes I have are from that thing. And
well, let me maybe wrap it up with, why do you think we're still talking about Nature's Table today? What's the lasting legacy?
It's hard to put that into terms. I mean, joy, realization, acknowledgement. Gratitude. So I did mention Sweet Betsy's, and, you know, I was hurting in 98. I needed a job. I was kind of playing for the dance department, but I was like, Terry, can I get a gig doing anything? Because Leanne Chen was also working at Sweet Betsy's earlier, so I was like, you know, it's not too much of a jump to hire me. And so I did a lot of stuff for Terry, and we hung out a bunch. Not always a good relationship. I'm sure you may have experienced some of his bad side, but overall, he was a pretty decent cat. He helped a lot of people out. And he was an excellent athlete, but that's sort of pre-Nature's Table. But he could still back you off on a one-on-one basketball game when he was in his, you know, 20 years older than I was or whatever. Or maybe not quite that much, but... So, and then... I don't know if there's much more to say.
Well, I think those are good final thoughts, and...
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I've left a lot out and probably included some things I shouldn't have said. But you are going to edit this, right? In some form.
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. All right. The one last parting word was when I was with Guido, we went to a party and it was like all, you know, 20-somethings and... We totally didn't fit in, so we just went out to his car, and he lit up a spliff, and this car pulled up behind us, and we didn't know if it was like an undercover cop or something, but he had this joint in his mouth, and he went like this, and he tucked it inside his mouth like a fucking lizard, and the car went by, wasn't a cop, and he took it out, and it was still lit. I thought that was skillful. I mean, this guy had some skills, you know? Who does that? You know, and then we talked about the next gig or something, you know. I think we left the party because it wasn't happening, but that was my last story about Guido, really. I mean, I found it really hard to talk to him after his, I guess it was his second stroke. I mean, it was just, maybe it's my weakness, but it was just depressing to talk to him. And I didn't want to see that, you know. But, because when I first heard him, I thought he was like Little Bird, you know. He sounded like Charlie Parker to me, especially as, you know, I was in high school. I didn't know what the hell I was hearing. And, but it was like, wow, man, that's jazz, you know. And it was live, and he was just very animated and really with it when I first met him, you know. Yeah.
That sounds like a good place to end, Tom, I think.
Okay.
Come full circle with Guido. Started with Guido, end with Guido. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Hey, man.